Tonight on The Download, Czech Please host Catherine Diorio, Growth Play co-founder Amy Dordek, and we reload this week's news with Lauren Cohn and Jeff Cohen. Now, here's your host, a man who wishes it would get colder so the flute player on Michigan Avenue would take it indoors, Justin Kaufman.
I've never been more serious about anything in my life. That flute player's got to go. That flautist, I know he's working hard out here, but he's giving flautists a bad name. There's a lot of... Now imagine that for 2 hours getting ready for the show. All right, I cleared it. Luckily, we're in a soundproof studio here on Michigan Avenue, the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Preps Plus Chicago, of course, lining up. What a show we got tonight. Let's reload the news, shall we? Lauren Cohn's going to be here, as well as Jeff Cohn from the Chicago Tribune. We'll hit the biggest stories, the winners, losers, overreported, underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole? Which story is going to be remembered in 500 years from this week? We'll talk to those guys, and of course you, 312-981-7200. I'm sure it'll have something to do with the Cubs. Don't tell me who won. I DVR'd it. I want to see. Could you imagine? Don't sit all day. Please don't. Don't tell me. I'm just, guys, la 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 la. There was a point where I was thinking about that. Pete, are you the kind of guy who, the fan who can't watch that you turn? I was talking to my dad, and my dad was like, it just got too much, so I switched it over. I was just like, I didn't want to know what was going to happen. I'm like, what?
No, I watch, but I really annoy my wife because I get up and down, and I walk places in the house, but I stay where, you know, where I can hear things. Yeah. But like Saturday, we're talking about like, oh yeah, I can't wait to watch a game. And my wife's like, we got to go somewhere because I cannot be with you alone in the house because you just drive me nuts. And I do.
Well, I mean, it's so fun. I mean, what an amazing game. I know everybody today talking about how sloppy the Tribune columnists were like, oh, it was a drunk game. I'm like, yeah, I know. But that's what pressure does. And frankly, you couldn't ask for anything better to have a one-run game regardless of how you got there. In the ninth inning with Wade Davis versus Bryce Harper. I mean, that's just that's baseball. And the Cubs usually are on the other side of that. So it's nice to see as they move on and take on the Dodgers.
I know another thing that I promised my wife was that if they made it to this far, I would finally get rid of the 2016 World Series off the DVR. I still have the whole thing on the DVR taking up a lot of space. So we have to decide on things to delete. And it's like, if they get to the NLCS, you can delete. Right. Buy the DVD.
And she's like, oh, man, they got the new show, The Mayor. I need to get that DVR. I don't get a chance to watch.
No room, 99%.
Can't do it. All right, coming up tonight, Catherine Diorio from Czech Please. That's going to be filling up my DVR. Am I the only one who has this problem? Czech Please, a lot of the times, they run a ton of reruns. And I don't know what it is about public TV in Chicago, but a lot of times they don't have the descriptions of the shows on Comcast. So it'll just say, you know, restaurant review show. And then you look it up the Saturday, oh, I'm going to watch Czech Please. I missed it last week. And there's 19 episodes that were recorded. And then you can't tell which one is new and which one's old and which one's HD and which one's not. It takes 45 minutes to watch the show. And there's nothing worse because you have to sit through the beginning of and then you get there and you're like, this one, that Chinese place in Rogers Park. I saw this one.
Yeah, they trick it because it comes up as new.
Yeah,
it says new, and I'm like, wait, I'm new.
Every
and
time,
then record,
yeah, there's something off. They got to work on that. They got to put an intern on that. Figure that out.
I'm looking forward to the new because you know how I love the intro.
Yeah.
So, like, by the second or third episode, I have the whole thing on it, the impressions.
Does every year...
Oh, no, I did not like... you know, whatever.
do they change it every year? Do they usually will change a different... Make a different...
Yeah, because one of our...
Elizabeth Gomez is on it.
One of our friends
plays
here.
Plays on the worst, and she's towards the end, she's like, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
That's whatever it is, yeah. All right, so she'll be on the show. Catherine Diorio coming up a little bit later. Also, Amy Dordek's here. We'll do this download in Chicago business. Talk about sales. I'm so excited to talk with Amy, mostly because it's amazing to look at the growth of her company, which ended up in Inc's the top fastest growing companies in America on the list this year, 2017. So we'll talk with her coming up as well. And like I said, we'll reload the news. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, Roger Badish, production with Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carry out. Stay with us. All right, so Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. President Trump became the first president to speak at the Value Voters Summit, put on by a Christian lobbying group that promotes traditional values. You know, like no ketchup on hot dogs or no gays. Trump gave a good speech about bringing God back, but then he also said, hey, they don't use the word Christmas because it's not politically correct. Well, guess what? We're saying Merry Christmas again. The crowd went wild. Who's they, first off? And second of all, boo. Not because I disagree with the sentiment, but because it's like seeing a sequel that just does the same movie over and over and over. We've seen this, Jackie Chan. There is no boogeyman who's on your street corner saying, don't say Merry Christmas. There's no Happy Holidays lobbyist in D.C. Most people don't say it because they recognize that not everybody celebrates Christmas. But they celebrate something, so for the sake of efficiency, we say, I don't know, Happy Holidays or whatever. And that's not a bad thing, right? Because at the core, Americans are great because we are open and polite. Novel concept. You could say Merry Christmas, I don't care. But I also think this is a made-up Fox News controversy that I don't really want my president involved in. Roll up the sleeves on other stuff. It's mid-October. Also, can we please just celebrate Halloween first? I'm sorry. My bad. I mean, happy last day of October first. President Trump is using his executive powers to take on big issues like the Iran nuclear deal, healthcare, and immigration. And he wants to force Congress to do something about them. It's been labeled as a high-stakes gamble because if he loses, he'll have to own all of these executive orders. If he wins, he'll undeadlock a historically bad Congress. It's funny because Republicans got so angry when President Obama used his executive actions to address issues he promised his base. They said it was illegal and unconstitutional and must go through Congress. Now they say, well, Trump has to do it because Congress just won't act. Isn't that the same thing? But the one thing we can all agree on, Congress is the worst, right? Amaya Pawar dropped out of the race for Illinois governor. He didn't have the cash. Because you don't need cash to be alderman. You just need a stencil to write your name on the sawhorses for the block parties. But the big question is, who is he going to endorse? Everyone not named Pritzker wants to be the progressive choice. So will it be Daniel Biss or will it be Chris Kennedy? Or will Bernie Sanders move to Schaumburg? There's still time. There's still time. I saw this on Facebook today. That's going to blow your mind. The shooting death of Dantrell Davis at Cabrini Green. That was 25 years ago today. Wow, what a terrible story. Remember that? That kid was 7 years old, got caught in gang crossfire walking to school. I mean, you could really point to that shooting as the end of public housing as we know it. Ben Austin wrote a book about it. It's going to come up. I'm going to get him on the show. But it blows your mind like to think back to that. That was 25 years ago. Anyone who follows Chicago, been to Chicago, knows the news, how big of a moment that was. Not just here, but nationally, but here. We felt something, so. In weather, wow, it's mid-October, 74 degrees today. It feels like 90 in the old office. I think they turned the heat on, the heat's already on. Like, we work in the Tribune Tower where they're like, nope, August, hey, it's October 13. The manual says turn it on. It's seriously like 87 degrees today. In sports, how very un-Cub of the Cubs. Yesterday night will go a long way to erasing some of the negative voodoo around Cubs lore. Because you know that type of game, that kind of struggle to hold on? That's Leon Durham's glove, or Will Clark, or Mark Pryor. All of that bubbled up in all of us last night. But a minor miracle, the Cubs refused to be the Cubs. Amazing. The Cubs beat the Washington Walgreens in 5 games, and they'll take on the Dodgers in a rematch of the NLCS. The Cubs' plane today was diverted to Albuquerque because of a sick passenger. So not an ideal start. But hey, the tarmac at the New Mexico airport, lovely this time of year. I'm sure they had a lot of fun just looking out at the tarmac. They said something like the plane was on the tarmac for 5 hours. I mean, even the Cubs can't get off the plane. Even the Cubs are like, oh, I demand another orange juice. Now the big question, who's going to start? Essentially, Joe Maddon had to trot out every single pitcher he had in the last two games. Will Quintana start? Lackey? Pitch a little batting practice, maybe? What about a Kevin Tappany? Is he still on the roster? He should be. We could use him. Spot start from a Tappany or maybe a Mike Remlinger right now? Real strong. The Dodgers make quick work of the Diamondbacks. They've been waiting for almost a week for this matchup. And the Dodgers do hold a regular season advantage. And we won't have Miguel Montero to hit any bombs off the bench in Wrigley. But it's pretty awesome to be back in the NLCS, right? The Dodgers bring some newbies to the dance. Corey Bellinger is a rookie. And Yu Darvish, Alex Wood, now Dodgers shutdown starters. They still have Kershaw and Rich Hill. Ugh, Rich Hill. I really hope they throw Rich Hill every game. I don't buy the sweeping slow curve pitcher, right? That's like a low-rent knuckleballer. I said good day. All right, let's go. What a weekend. What a week lined up for next week at Wrigley Field. It's going to be awesome. What a perfect time to be a Bears quarterback coming off a Monday Night Football loss. The Bears and Trubisky have become the second fiddle story in this town, which is probably a great thing for all parties involved. Trubisky will start against the Ravens on Sunday. The Ravens are up to their old ways again with a defense that scores, but they're still mediocre. So it'll be interesting to see how Trubisky fares. You know the Bears are losing interest when the biggest football story is about what Mike Ditka says about race. Really? We don't have anything else to talk about? Tanner Gentry? No? Oh, Ditka? Cool. Ditka. Hey, the Niners released inside linebacker Navarro Bowman today. Did you see that? He used to play for Vic Fangio, Pro Bowler. The Bears need an inside linebacker. I forget. Why do I even bring this up? You know they're not going to do it. We're good with who we have. When you watch Monday Night Football, John Gruden's like, I've never seen a guy not play inside linebacker the right way. This is the worst inside linebacker I've ever seen. No, we don't need. We're good. John Fox will fix it. Also, wide receiver Marcus Wheaton won't play on Sunday. Oh, it's because of an injury, not because the dude took a ton of money in the offseason and has yet to catch a pass for the Bears? Cool. Tomato, tomato. Sure. The Blackhawks will welcome the Nashville Predators to the UC tomorrow night for a rematch of last year's playoff series. Predators. Every time I see that yellow, I think, oh, cool, they're showing minor league hockey again tonight. Oh, that's a real team? Cool. And finally tonight, a man found an old lottery ticket in his shirt, and it turned out to be a winner worth $24 million. Are you kidding me? That's amazing. Wait, let's see. Hold on. Let me see what's in my shirt. Is this gas receipt worth anything? No. How about a Target coupon for 30 cents off my next cat food purchase? Oh, yeah? That's worth 30 cents? Yay. That's a carryout for Friday, October 13th, 2017. Hey, it's Friday the 13th, so just remember, if you order the fries and they're old, hard, or soggy, not our fault. You're just unlucky. All right, coming up, Amy Dordick's going to be here for the Guess Some Download on Chicago Business. We're going to talk about effective sales, innovating sales when it comes to business. I'm excited about this. I don't know much about it, but I've been reading up on it. It's a download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
You crack me up, man. I love when you go all Sherman and Peabody on me and hop in the Wayback Machine and pull out a name like Kevin Tappany.
Don't we need a Tappany right now?
Wouldn't you like to? How did you pull that? Wouldn't that be great?
Third inning, we're having trouble. Looks like Tappany's warming up. Cubs fans would be like, this is great.
He's giving the number two on the sleeve there. Here comes Tappany from the bullpen.
Looks like he's going to
be warming up for the last 15 years.
Seriously. Exactly. They're going to need them, man. They're going to need all of them.
Yeah. Arm's a little rusty. Get it out of the mothballs.
All right. It's business time. It's business. It's business time. I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time. Ooh, it's business. It's business time. It's time for the download on Chicago Business. Sponsored by Signature Bank. This is our weekly segment talking with small business owners, entrepreneurs, CEOs about their stories so we can better understand ours. Tonight, let's get into one of the more overlooked parts of small business or any business, sales. What do we know about what makes a good sales department? Everything I learned from the profession, I learned from Glengarry Glen Ross. Put that coffee down. Coffee is for closers. But to be a successful company that's able to sell their product, there's much more that goes into it beyond wining and dining. My guest tonight, Amy Dordick, she is the co-founder of Growth Play, a sales consulting firm. Their mission to elevate the act of selling from a transaction to a value-added service. What does that mean? Amy's had over 25 years of experience in sales, and she is tasked with helping clients make money, but also helping clients understand the new way of selling. Also, Growth Play was just named to the 2017 Inc. 500 list, ranked as the 22nd fastest growing private company in the United States. In 2016, they posted $29.3 million in revenue. Not bad for a company that is in its third year of existence. Amy Dordick, co-founder and managing director of business development, because at Growth Play, you talk the talk, you walk the walk. Amy Dordick, thanks for being my guest tonight.
Thank you, Justin.
So I'm fascinated in your career because you have, as much as you've dedicated your life to sales, you've also been involved in startups here in Chicago. I mean, the last 15 plus years. So you've kind of been able to balance and do a lot of different things in the business community here. Talk about how Growth Play came to be.
Yeah, so the idea came about because there are so many sales training organizations out there, and we talk so much about how training is not always the answer. So we had this idea about a holistic approach to sales. So there are three aspects that we often address. One is looking at the sales organization. Are you organized right? You used the word alignment when we were talking.
Right, right.
Are you aligned? Is your strategy aligned to your structure? That's more consulting, and that's the part of our company that's sales effectiveness consulting. But the other parts are, do you have the right people in the right jobs? That's often an overlooked area of sales. You know, having the right people in the right roles, that's the way we say it, is critical to your success. And if you right. then have the right people in the right jobs, when you train them, you supercharge your organization because you're training people who are a fit for the job they're in. And there's multiple different kinds of sales roles.
Well, I mean, and I always think about this because I don't know much about sales. I've never been in a job that I have to sell anything. I've always been
but
on the
inside. But
we're always
sales.
Selling. That's right. That's right. But I mean, it is interesting when you say the right people in the right place, because it's not necessarily about experience in the way that, you know, you want the most experienced person, but you want the right person that's got the right attitude and
skills,
and
behaviors
skills for your company. Right?
Exactly. We use the word competencies, which might sound a little technical, but it's just the skills and behaviors of what good looks like in a role. Like the words hunting and farming are often used. They're kind of old school terms, but people understand what they mean. So what's good for a hunter, someone who's aggressive, someone who can prospect, who can leverage their network, who can work a process, is different than a farmer who's maintaining, managing clients. So those people are often really different kinds of people.
Interesting. So you got to almost think about their actual personality.
Yeah. And what skills and activities. So what do you do in a hunting job? It's a different thing. It's a different set of skills and it's a different set of activities than in farming, which is more of like making sure your client is happy, creating that great client experience so you can upsell, cross sell. Those are the words we use.
You know, it's amazing to me. You've had such success in such a short amount of time. I mean, to talk about being in your third year in existence and to be on the Inc. list of 500, which is a huge prestigious honor. And also to post the $29 million in revenue. I'm interested because is that say that there is a need for your services? Does that say that the business community here in Chicago, but all around the world, is like, hey, you know what? We really need to get this sale. We need to supercharge our sales system.
Yeah, who doesn't need sales, right? Who doesn't need to get sales right? Who doesn't want to drive more revenue growth? I think that message sort of resonates. And there's such a wide variety of ways that you can do what I just said, drive growth. You know, you can attack from a wide variety of angles, but really if you can look at the three things that I just said, sort of your organizational alignment, your people, and then giving them the right skills, teaching them the right process, giving them data to make good decisions and to be informed. You know, we talk all about some of the trends today it's all about the customer.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, what's changed? What's changed from the salesman I know? What is it going to take to get
coffee.
You in this car, right?
Right. It's so funny. So I often tell this story when I'm talking about the need for sales. So why is there a demand for what we do? Well, you know, I hate to pick on auto dealers. But when I, Amy Dordek, went to buy a car, I went to the dealership, and like everyone else, I had done all my homework already. I mean, you've probably done that too.
Absolutely.
So most buyers of any service today have already done their homework. So they know like 80% of what they need to know before they've gotten to you. So I went to the dealer and I knew exactly what I wanted. And if the dealer had just said to me, Amy, please give me the most important criteria in buying a car instead of let me get you in a car today. And, you know, how can I get you to drive one off the lot? If they had just asked me what's, we use the words like decision criteria, what's your most important aspect today? What's going to be most important in buying a car? And I would have told them, Justin, to see over the steering wheel is my number one criteria. I'm not a tall woman. And so if they asked that question, they would have gotten me. They would have understood me. Instead, they talked to me about horsepower. I had no idea what they were talking
about. But that's a great point when I talk about what's changed, because that's a big part of understanding the audience the customers or, you know, who's buying. But there is this idea that you have to think differently in 2017 than maybe you did even 10 years ago.
Oh, totally. I mean, again, everyone has data now. You can go to the internet. You can find out. Look what you found out about my company and me. You know, if you went to my LinkedIn profile, which I would expect you to do if you were meeting with me, so that you'd know what's important to me and who I am. You know, buyers know more than they ever did before. So you have to be better. The real opportunity is to differentiate in the how. How you do what you do, not just what you do, following the steps in the process, but how you show up. Are you interested? Do you know your customer? Are you interested in your buyer's needs? Those are the things that differentiate today.
Amy Dordek's in studio. She is the co-founder of Growth Play, which is a sales consulting firm, which is, they were just on the Inc. 500 list for 2017, ranked as the 22nd fastest growing private company in the United States. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download in Chicago Business. Amy Dordek in studio. Stay with us.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
In studio tonight, The Download in Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank, Amy Dordek. She's the co-founder and managing director of business development for Growth Play, a sales consultancy firm that does so much more than that, but that's just sort of generically move us along in the conversation. The company was just named to the 2017 Inc. 500 list, ranked as the 22nd fastest growing private company in the United States. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk more about sales. I'm reading so much today about this, and it is an area
I'm so proud of you.
there's a lot of information on what makes a great sales department, what makes a great salesman, but there's a lot about just this idea of alignment. We kind of mentioned it before, but this idea of making sure that your sales department, whatever company you work for, is in line with the executives. And that wasn't always the case. That's changed over time. But the idea that now they have to be organic.
Right. And they have to be. So it's all about alignment with strategy. So if you don't understand the strategy of your company and the sales organization doesn't reflect that, and then the structure itself, and what I mean by structure. So nowadays, we were talking, more things are bought online. More things are, the process of buying and selling is streamlined.
Right.
So many companies are moving from outside sales, your coffee for closers example, you know, or like door-to-door sales. More and more is going inside sales. So people on the phone, it's less expensive to send people out into the field. So looking at how are you structured from what jobs do you need in sales? Do you need outside sales, inside sales? Do you need more sales managers, different competencies, different things required from a sales manager than a salesperson? So all of that, I think people are paying more attention to the costs associated with selling and how people are structuring their organizations.
It's amazing too, because it's the old adage even in performance, where it says play to the height of your audience's intelligence. And that's something that even Second City and other places, they'll always talk about that being at the core.
It feels
to me that that's what you're talking about. Instead of sort of playing someone for a rube or trying to get you to buy my product, to appreciate the what they bring to the table, knowing that they're well prepared and meet them at their level, seems to be a better strategy for something that everybody has to engage with.
For sure. So most sales methodologies are built on a philosophy that teaches selling or teaches sellers about how to get more of what they want. So it's me-centric. I think that's why Daniel Pink wrote a book, To Sell as Human. Americans surveyed had like this really negative reaction to salespeople. But if instead you can associate selling with, you know, acts of service, helping somebody get what they need, solving a problem. You know, if you tell me you have an issue, a pain, we call it in sales, getting to the pain, you know, but if I can resolve your pain, if I can relieve your pain in a way that, you know, gets you better, gets to you to this place of a great outcome, well, then that's an act of service, right? And that's really what we think at Growth Place Selling is.
And value plays a big role. You had a lot of case studies, and I was fascinated by the concept that there's a price for everything. There'll be the price, and that's, there is value in that price. But what you're talking about when you use the word value is beyond that. What is the, holistically, when you look at it, what is your, the product doing to mitigate risk? What is the product doing to change in the brand identity?
Right. What
it's
outcomes?
Much more than the actual what the price is and what that product's going to do for you.
So what we even teach is moving people off of price, because if it's about price and you aren't the lowest cost provider, then you might as well self-select out. They're not a good customer for you. We call that qualification.
So if they're at the point where I'm just taking the lowest bidder, get out.
And you're not the lowest bidder, and that's not your value proposition, walk away. And that's really hard for salespeople. That's hard in any business, I think, to walk away. But really good qualification is understanding what value you provide and who's a good customer for you. And then if you can move them off price, like I've had this happen all the time, somebody calls me up and says, I need negotiation training. And I ask about 10 questions. We call that good discovery. And I do all this discovery and I find out that's not what they need at all. And then I've moved them from sales training, which is fine. Sales training can be very valuable, but that's not what they need. I move them to a place of what outcomes are they trying to get to? And that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
We're trying to help people see outcomes. So outcomes could be avoiding risk, increased revenue. It could be increased client satisfaction, client loyalty. Those are the things you want to focus on, because then price becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you mentioned it, and I think it's interesting. When do you walk away from a sales relationship as a salesperson? Do you, I mean, let's say it's being strung along or it's not working or you feel like you're not communicating. When do you walk away?
Well, you can test that. There's always money on the table, but sometimes it's not good money for you, or it could be a loss. So, you know, we teach qualification and really how to understand who's a good customer for you. You can tell who's not a good customer for you. If your value prop is that you know, create good outcomes and you're really interested in taking a company to a whole different level, if somebody's all about price, and oftentimes what happens is you walk away and then they sort of say, well, no, wait a minute. You know, no, could we keep talking? Because sometimes walking away is one of the smartest things you can do, and doing it earlier in the process is often better.
Amy, for your life that you've spent in sales and even startups, I mean, you as a business person and as much success with this company, there have to be a lot of, it's a frustrating job, I would assume, because you are
selling.
Is always, but how do you deal with that frustration? Are you the kind of person that has taught yourself to say, all right, you know, there's going to be some that I win and some that I lose?
Course.
I mean, how do you do that?
So what's the worst thing that can happen? What's the worst thing that can happen in a sale? Someone yells at you or whatever. But really, it's no. Like, that's the worst thing that can happen. So if you can handle no, which I can handle very well, except when a cold caller calls and they're doing a really good job. My husband hates this. And I, like, walk them through, like, tell me more. And I, like, test them. And they're cold calling me about something. Like, I totally succumbed to that the other day. The girl did such a great job. And I'm like, she's like, will you contribute? And it was something I did kind of care about. And I said, yes. She goes, really? And I said, yes. Because she was looking for no.
Right,
you know?
She's just so, accustomed to it. Right.
But that's the worst that can happen is no. And when you teach people that, it's like, it's not about you. It's not personal.
Yeah. Amy Dordick is the co-founder and managing director of business development at Growth Play, a sales consulting firm that does much more than that. But they also were in the 2017 Inc. 500 list, ranked as the 22nd fastest growing private company in the United States. Amy, it's a pleasure. Thanks for coming in and talking sales
tonight.
I appreciate it.
So good to see you.
Right, thank you, Rob Martier. Justin Kaufman, it's a download, 720 WGN. All right, it's time to reload this week's news. We got a lot to talk about, the biggest stories, the winners, the losers, overreported, underreported, which story took you down the rabbit hole this week, and which story will be remembered 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week. This is going to be a good one. Last week, we had the Las Vegas shooting, and that dominated the entire thing, as it should. But I think this week it's kind of up for grabs on what would be the news story of the week. 312-981-7200. We got capable panelists tonight. Lauren Cohn, journalist. Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter at the Tribune. Cohen and Cohn in studio. Good to see you guys.
I feel like a law firm / accounting firm.
we'll end that real quickly as soon as we start talking.
It's true.
All right, so let's get to the biggest story. We kind of look at both, but what do you have, Lauren, for the biggest story of the week?
It was the soda tax, which is really the sweetened beverage tax, which is really the ridiculous Tony Taxwinkle tax. I could just keep going, but I'm going to just look over at Jeff now.
You're really on it. You've given nicknames and everything to this. Like you feel like this is going to be a stain on Toni Preckwinkle for the rest of her.
I think Ballet Slippers is done. I think she's going to be always known as Toni Taxwinkle, and now she's kicked it to the commissioners. Well, now it's on you guys to figure out how to fill the hole for the revenue, because I tried with sweetened beverages, and you know me, I'm a holistic health coach. I'm all about health, but this was always about revenue. And I've said this before, if you're going to tax sweetened beverages, which, by the way, this was the most confusing tax ever of what is a sweetened beverage, or so, then tax everything that has sugar and, you know, stuff in it that's bad for you.
Jeff, what do you think? Do you think, from the soda tax or sweetened beverage tax, I mean, this was definitely a fumble.
It was a big fumble. It was super unpopular. I mean, I like Vitamin Water Zero, and that was getting taxed as well, but... Yeah, I think for me going forward, the most interesting thing is going to be what is the damage to her? Because we've talked about this before. She's kind of like an under-the-radar boss type character here. I mean, you want to run for judge? She's one of the people you go see.
She sat next to Hillary Clinton or next to Bill Clinton in the Democratic convention.
She stacked the deck for Kim Fox and had kept people out of that race. So she's kind of like an old school person. So I'm just wondering going forward, does she still have that same
weight? I guess the question I have is that Toni Preckwinkle, for all of that you said, Lauren, I actually would put her, and I know that I am in the I'm utmost minority when it comes to this, but I would almost even put her in a winner category because of all the politicians and all of the people that are in power right now, and whether it be the commissioners, she's the one who stood by her guns. She wanted to do this. She went for it. She's been going for it for 2-3 years. She says over and over that it's about both revenue and it's about health. And I don't know, I want that conviction from my policy. She believes in something that's hurting her community. She wants to go ahead and fix it and at the same time make money off it. I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is Cook County commissioners who at one point were for it, and then they recognized through reading the tea leaves that they're like, no, I'm not. You're not? I'm not. Oh, yeah. And then they, now I can run for another office. I feel like that's what we're sick of in politicians, the ones who just kind of jump and bump. Now, I do understand that there was Cook County voters who came out and said, overwhelmingly, this is bad. And constituents calling up their commissioners, that kind of stuff. I understand that, so I can understand why they would say, all right, this is bad. But I feel more often than not in this saga, it has been Cook County commissioners looking for their opportunity, using their ambition to be able to take advantage of a political situation.
Well, it seems like the Chicago way is not always the politician that we really like. It's the politician that, we don't like, but then there's someone else we don't like more, right? So Rahm beat Chuy Garcia because suddenly Chuy came out and he was a little bit more to the left, and suddenly the unpopular, unlikable, mean Rahm won a second time, right? So that's what happened. So it really depends on who Tony, runs against and what happens. I don't think Tony looked likable in this, because if you looked at the headlines and the way it played out in the media, it was never so much that she really cared about health. It was she's not admitting that revenue's a part of it. And so when it really played out in the headlines that she finally admits it's revenue. So I never got the feeling that Tony cared so much about my health.
I know, having her on the show, she was on the show with me, and she was quick, because she always is, but she was quick to knock me down to say, no, this is about revenue, but it's also about health. Like, she made it clear that it was both, because I went at her the same way, saying, you say this is about health, but isn't it about revenue? She's like, in the classic Preckwinkle pause, well, it's about both.
We were just saying off the air, though, it seems like when the projections started coming back that sales were down so far that the revenue was going to flatten out. That's when all the flipping happened.
Yeah, right.
They realized that
they're not going to make the money they wanted to anyway.
And they're catching the political arrows for no reason now.
Right.
So I don't know how much credit you get for that kind of a flop.
Well, and then all these politicians, so they're flipping because they want to make sure they get reelected. And it's really up to the people. It's the people here who vote have to wake up and take a look at, who are you voting for then?
Lauren, as a holistic health coach and what have you, Eric Zorn had a great piece this week about whether or not what you believe in one side and what this tax went through. We, for the first time in modern American history had a serious conversation about the ill effects of soda and sugary drinks. It became an issue that was talked about on talk shows and in newspapers and other places where before it wasn't. So is that a win for Preckwinkle, Bloomberg, and people that want to see this issue taken care of?
Not in my book, because I think that everybody knows that fruits and vegetables are good for you and that, you know, eat your protein. I think everybody knows that. You know that sugar's bad for you. You know that cake and cookies are bad for you, but you like it anyway and you want to eat it anyway. The bottom line is people don't want to be told what to put in their bodies. Educate people, and you find out later on, you know, if you get diabetes or it leads to, you know, strokes and cancer. And we all want to sort of push people towards a healthier lifestyle. I mean, obviously, we want to educate people, and it drives down health costs later on, right? But to try and force people and tell them what they can put in their bodies, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, but it's not forcing them, it's taxing them. There's a big difference. There's no ban on sugar. They're just saying, if you want this product, it's a dollar more.
It was just so confusing to have, you know, non-sweetened drinks in the mix and, you know, diet sodas and things that aren't, you know, 400 grams of sugar. I think that coming out of the gate, people didn't believe it. I never really.
But you stopped drinking soda, right?
I did.
So this is kind of what you were
look
just asking this question.
Good, right?
Well, you always look good, but yeah. Did you lose weight? Do you feel different?
I do, but then again, I'm. It's more than that. But I do. I think I wonder about this, and Pete and I have talked about this as well. This idea that, you know, it is out there in the ether, and everyone's talking about it, that it makes me go, yeah, you know what? I don't want to pay that extra dollar. I just won't do it. I shouldn't drink it anyway. I'm just not going to drink it. And I feel like that kind of worked in the sense that I was probably drinking two Dr. Peppers or coffee with, you know, sugar and everything, you know, even though that wasn't part, you know, that's why it got confusing. But my point is that if you're in a situation like the cigarettes is what I always think about. It took a monster marketing campaign by the government, really, to say that there is a connection to cancer. Here are the x-rays. Here are the look at this photo. Look at this photo. Look at this photo. And I'm going to put a tax on top of you. We're not at that point yet in
you
society
got,
cause when
you
talk
go
about
with everything.
Coca-Cola.
Then you got to go with sugar. It's not just like it's soda. It's got to be sugar. Sugar is addictive. Sugar is, you know, like a drug. You have to go at that route. And there's been a lot of stuff out there just about sugar.
Yeah, I guess you do. I just wonder, though, on this idea of liquid candy, if these companies, these big companies, not unlike tobacco and the tobacco industry, have targeted certain blocks and have targeted kids in the way of doing this very similar kind of stuff that was done by other industries that we've turned out, that found out that the product's bad for us.
Well, it seems like there are strategies that are maybe a little bit more targeted than just an across-the-board tax. Like we've seen school districts take, you know, vending machines out of cafeterias, right, and things like that. So maybe there's some momentum. I just don't see that it's going to change behavior that much when you've got people just driving to Indiana to get 7 gallons of Coke. You know?
Well, and a lot of people, were going out like other areas to buy and load up. But here's the thing. So now what? Because we're in a hole. We've got to pay for the pension somehow. We're not getting any kind of reform. So they're not going to have this. What's the next tax? What are the commissioners going to do? You know, they're going to tax the air you breathe. I mean, what's left? Or is it this redistribution? What Mayor Emanuel is saying, okay, now we're going to change how we tax amusement.
I mean, Lauren, you nailed it. I mean, I think that everything's on the table, and they only have a month. I mean, I think the budget for Cook County is voted on in mid-November. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight, 312-981-7200. Okay, we'll come back. We'll do winners and losers. Cubs. We'll talk overreported, underreported. Cubs. And we'll also talk about which story we remembered. Cubs? Maybe. Stay with us. Oh, yeah. They're coming in. Texts coming in. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen, 312-981-7200. We are reloading this week's news. 406 says, where's the candy bar, Twinkies, and junk food tax if it's all about health? Yeah, they're following. If soda tax was about health and not revenue, then why are job losses linked to the lack of additional tax? Justin, a carrot will never replace a Coke. That's from Ed. If it was for our health, she'd want us to stop buying the stuff, and it worked. How are they going to make money? No sales equals $0. And then 312 says, Lauren, and this is for Lauren, I want to be told what, okay, your guest doesn't want to be told what to be put in her body, so why does the party have no hesitation to tell a woman she has no right to control her body? It's a little abortion kind of knock. So
are we walking down
there?
No,
let's not.
Let's
not.
It's Friday.
That's a gear shift from the pop tax.
Whoa. Okay.
312-981-7200. All right, let's get to the winners this week. This will be a fun one because they're, I mean, obviously, and Lauren, you're a big winner. And I mean,
thank you.
Yeah, right? What do you have for the winner?
Oh, the Cubs.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know. And I admit, I fell asleep. I tried to stay awake, put pins in my eyes, and but I woke up in the morning. That was the first thing I looked at. You got to love the Cubbies. You got to love them.
I mean, it is so, the new Cubs are so un-Cub. In the way that last night's game, there was, I mean, you felt it as in lifelong Chicago. And I'm a White Sox guy, but knowing the Cubs, I'm like, the sweat, I'm just like, they're going to, this is exactly how I felt as a kid in 84 or a kid in 89. But this team isn't that Cub.
I don't think the fan base had the panic going into that game that we would have had, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And even when they got down early on, I don't think much. I mean, people were starting to freak out, but not in the Cub way that you would have in, you know, 1989. Or
That eighth inning. The eighth inning,
the
when,
game was,
I mean,
torture.
Wilson Contreras picking off the Lobaton from first base.
Well, that's the other thing.
What
without replay,
amazing, what an amazing play.
Without replay, we may not be having this conversation.
Amazing.
Sure.
The Chicago Cubs, of course, winners. And you know what? The best part about it is that the Chicago Cubs, this will be 3 years in a row.
Three
NLCSs in a row. It's hard to even fathom that the Chicago Cubs are in that conversation. And the great thing is it brings a great baseball series in October to Chicago. I mean, even if they don't, repeat as world champions, the fact that they're giving this kind of competition to the city where they're I mean, in baseball, it's almost unheard of to be in a situation where you get 3 years in a row. Those are the elite teams, and the Chicago Cubs won a World Series, and that's amazing.
And it's nice that we have something to get excited about. Considering the cycle of news and all the things that go on, that we have something to be happy about and smile about and cheer about.
This was kind of a loser sports town. We were the giant Cleveland for a long time.
Right.
Now, if anybody who's been around long enough, you've seen, I mean, I know for me, I've seen arguably peak Bears, 85, peak Bulls, no question, peak Blackhawks, you know, snuck a White Sox World Series in there, and now peak Cubs for sure. This is, Theo said, this is the Cubs' golden era.
And you can't get excited about the Bulls and the Bears right now.
Jeez. Can you imagine the NBA starts next week?
I was writing down my list of all the teams I wanted to watch where all our players that I liked went. So D-Wade went to Cleveland. Where's Jimmy Butler's what? He's the Timberwolves now.
Right?
Like all my
with
favorite
Taj
players.
Gibson. Got Taj Gibson's in Minnesota too.
Yeah, that's right.
So there you go. All right. So the other winner, as we talk about winners this week, Jeff, you had Twitter.
I felt like I was digging deep for winners this week. Once you got past the Cubs.
They had a tough week. I would say that they're up and down. Well, I would put them in my loser category.
And I know that point. It seems like every day I come to the realization more, and maybe I'm late to this as a media person, but just how essential Twitter has become in our society.
Right.
I mean, Trump has made it the go-to messaging system from the White House to the people of the United States, number one. That's a whole rare category. But every time we go through something like we went through with the Weinstein situation and Rose McGowan this week, and today there was a women's boycott of Twitter.
Yep.
But it wasn't an Uber situation. It didn't get deleted. It was one day because it's become that essential for everybody. And just the reaction to the Rose McGowan thing was, I mean, you would have thought that somebody put her in prison, you know, when her account was shut down.
Yeah, I mean, it shows a lot of influence, especially the other platforms that would be their competitors, Facebook. You're finding more and more nefarious activity that's happening there, you know, with the ads and everything that's happening, that it does seem more and more we see the sources of the articles that we're reading are all from Twitter.
Twitter's winning. And I don't know if you did this, but you watched the Cubs game like last night. I've got the phone in my
right.
one hand just watching people react to everything because I think it's funny. Or, you know, ESPN's throwing stats out real time. It's just, I don't know, it feels like it's really.
Well, and if you go back to when, you know, we started in newsrooms and we had remember the AP wires and the UP, you know, what was it, the UPI wire that was taking out? That's how we got our information. We didn't have the easy access to information. Even now, those of us who are journalists, we're vetting things and we're looking at things, but the general public isn't doing what we do. So their news source is Twitter, because they're not going to read through all the stuff that we read
through. Which
is
dangerous. It's dangerous in the way that there's a lot of stuff on Twitter that's just wrong. I find myself here on the show where I'll say, yeah, I read this thing about blah, blah, blah. And they're like, where'd you read that? I'm like, Twitter. Like, right away, I didn't really read it. I just kind of
looked at it. I had to retrain myself. It used to be, you know, was it on page one? Now the paper, that's literally an afterthought. And then it was, well, where is it on the homepage? You know, can I get above, you know, this certain click area? Now literally just throw it on Twitter at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and if it's good enough, you just watch it explode.
And don't you feel the pressure to tweet?
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it. That is also a big part of Twitter this week. that the New York Times, a new editorial or just the editorial team there.
The policy
yeah. is that they will no longer be able to have sort of free rein on Twitter to say what you will, which has been a big point of contention for the Trump administration, for others, that that reporters are on there, you know, giving their opinion on what they think about this, that, and the other. And the New York Times has been pretty loose with their policy, but the managers say no more.
Well, we get reminded of it upstairs, you know, in internal memos that we need to be careful about. It can be the equivalent of putting a campaign sign on your lawn if you're routinely, you know, on one side or the other.
Yeah, right.
It does undercut what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're talking winners and losers, reloading the news. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break, get an update on tonight's news, and then we'll come back and we'll get to the big category everybody's waiting for, losers. All right, 312-981-7200. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We're getting through the winners, and now it's time for the losers. I feel like more often we find ourselves with more in this category than in the other. I don't know what that says about this segment or about society we live in, but there are a lot. Why don't we start close to home and go with Mike Dicca as our first? I mean, this was something that we all had on our list as, you know, he, of course, doing the Monday Night Football pregame for radio, made the assertion that over the last 100 years there hasn't been any I think he used the word
oppression
yeah. of black people, and he just questioned. I mean, when that came out, I mean, you just automatically were like, even people who may even people who might understand what he was trying to say, are like, maybe not the right way to say it, but
well, I mean, even you remember 2014. He had the quote about the Redskins name, and he thought that whole controversy was stupid. And he was quoted as saying, you know, what are we supposed to do, call them the Proudskins? And just there's always a little bit of wincing with Chicago because we were just talking about it. It's like he's such a name brand here. You know, he's a one-name guy, Ditka, Jordan, as far as Chicago sports
yeah,
goes.
Right,
he's an icon. And people just want him to kind of, you know, chill out, sit there, be Ditka, sell the Chevrolets, have the steakhouse, you know, be that guy. We don't need the
political kind of commentary.
Crazy, yeah. Well, leave the racial analysis to somebody else.
And even to people who, you know, got down on one knee, he had harsh comments. But the thing about Ditka is that when he came out and apologized, like he got it, right? He's like, I goofed or I apologized. I was talking about players and I wasn't talking about everybody. Of course, I know there's oppression. Then you're like, oh yeah, it's Ditka and he apologized and at least he did that. And then you sort of, he's still the likable Ditka for some reason.
Yeah,
you know?
It is interesting. Yeah. I mean, of course, this is probably a societal thing in the way that we, you know, sports heroes, and we put them up on a pedestal, and we will quickly give them the ability to roll things back and apologize, you know, in some ways. But there is something to be said, Jeff, about this concept of, and I don't mean this as any disrespect to Mike Ditka, but stay in your lane in the way that you're like, okay, this is what you do. You covered football. We like you because of football. We also kind of like you because you're Chicago. But the other issues that are going around the world, maybe you have your own opinions about it, but we don't need to hear him. Like, at a certain point, it was like, yeah, you know. So I don't know. I feel like Ditka shows up in the loser category, although he did apologize. A strange apology, I think, but yeah.
Somebody told him to apologize.
There were a lot of words in that apology in the statement that you're like, wow, Ditka, that doesn't
and it was
sound
a little bit
Ditka.
Of, well, I guess I apologize, but no matter what I say, you're going to take it the wrong
right,
way.
Right, exactly.
So have a nice day.
All right, moving on. Another at the capital L loser category, Harvey Weinstein. I mean, I don't even know what to say as more and more is revealed about his terrible behavior, and not just behavior, criminal behavior. I mean, now Rose McGowan and Twitter, you mentioned, Jeff. I mean, the rape accusations, sexual assault accusations, that are the serious, and then even serious as well, but just the propositioning and the consistencies in the stories of all these these actresses that came up. I mean, it's astounding that this is out, and there is a question of why now, what's happening, but this story it seems to be getting bigger.
Well, I'm asking that question, why now? I mean, it's like the same thing with Roger Ailes at Fox News, the Bill Cosby story. One person's story comes out, and obviously there was an investigation with The New Yorker and The New York Times, and suddenly the floodgates open. And a lot of these actresses that are coming out, and I, you know, you feel for them for what happened. But take Gwyneth Paltrow for as an example, who said it happened, but yet she stayed with him and went. And I don't know if she won the award for Shakespeare in Love, mm-hmm. but stayed with him for these. And even, you know, many of the men who are coming out in Hollywood who feel compelled, you know, to say something like George Clooney, you know, or hearing about it. Well, I heard something about it, but I didn't really think this was this far.
Right.
And it's just sort of this kind of grotesque. Everybody knew it was going on, but overlooked it. And then the cat's out of the bag, so let's open the floodgates.
Well, people aren't in Hollywood. We're familiar with the concept of casting couch. It's been grossly depicted in pop culture, and we all know the secrets that are behind.
It's part of the media culture.
Yeah, right, exactly. But the question is that we almost always want to assume that it's a bygone era. That was something in the 50s and the 60s or 70s or 80s and 90s, but that can't be happening now.
Yeah,
so to have this
wonder.
Come out, it's just, and a lot of this was in Harvey Weinstein's past, but it does make you just sort of, I mean, I'm dejected in the sense that it's 2017 and the casting couch at this level still exists.
Yeah, I mean, the only bright side you can think of is, as you pointed out, these are some of the most powerful women in Hollywood, and, you know, maybe, you know, there can be some realization that if they can come forward and this happened to them, that maybe other victims out there can have the courage to say something, you know, a similar situation that's not graduated to that level, but it's in more of an everyday scenario.
Well, and that maybe, you know, in the new generations that are coming up, the millennials just won't be a part of it. I mean, Jane Fonda said, I just found out about her. I knew about it a while ago, but I'm too old. You know, it didn't happen when I was younger. He's going for the younger. I don't know if it'll change the culture, because I feel like there's what else is next. Okay, so we had all these with the stuff at Fox News, and maybe, and now the tide of the culture maybe change over there, and the Bill Cosby and this. But I think it's just going to continue. I do. I still think there's a lot of sexism in society, and we haven't broken the glass ceiling as women, and people are still afraid not to speak up if they want their jobs or success. Right. I hate to say it.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. There is something to take away from this. I mean, just jaw-dropping story of Harvey Weinstein. That might be it. The idea that there is, you know, that this is still a rampant issue for women in society. And, you know, this is obviously a situation that at least we shine a light on it. And people like Harvey Weinstein are at least punished for the wrongdoings.
And now allegedly his defense is what? He's got a sex addiction and he's going to go for treatment in Arizona. And the TMZ video that caught him saying, I'm okay. Everyone deserves a second chance, you know.
I mean, it's decades and decades of stuff. And if it wasn't for the New York Times, yeah, he's not changing his ways.
I mean, it's like the Tiger Woods defense.
The question is, and you hear this, and this is the only thing that I take away from it, and I find it to be such a terrible story, but why now? We heard that. And then there have been some thoughts that, you know, this was leaked by the Weinstein Company that was given the New York Times or New Yorker, that people, it wasn't just sort of victims coming forward, but it was someone alerting and saying, we have this information. And then you just wonder about how much of this is just Harvey Weinstein's down on his luck. And I don't even say wonder. This has been said. He's not as powerful as he used to be. He's older. He's frail. Now's the time to strike if we want to take his power from him. And I don't mean the victims. I mean Hollywood.
That sounds like more of the movie and the narrative that would make sense.
Right. That it's not necessarily let's get this predator off the streets. It's more let's take this.
Sadly.
Let's use it, and so we can get the power, and you know, some other predator replaces him. There you go. All right, the good losers today. Let's keep going to losers. You have U.S. soccer, Jeff. tough week for U.S. soccer.
I'm not a soccer person, but yeah, I understand that this was sort of the Hindenburg of American soccer, and they're not going to be in the World Cup in 2018. I guess we could put Fox there. I guess they had planned to broadcast
right.
And basically had bet the farm on it.
That's tough. You have to. The United States has to come. I don't know soccer that well, but I do know that the teams that are in their division to be able to bounce to get to the World Cup qualifiers, they're supposed to beat. This is a monumental,
right.
Upset. They should all be fired at U.S. soccer.
My understanding was that it had basically been set up that way as well. And no knock on Trinidad and Tobago, but you know, it seems like that was one that they could have had.
Yeah, it's not a good day. And you're right, because the World Cup this is a big, big event. I mean, it rivals the Olympics in the way that people go crazy around the world for it. I mean, you see, even in Chicago, there were viewing parties. to have the United States not actually in that competition, that is very strange.
Well, we've been hearing for years, too, about how it's the new Little League and the MLS. You know, that league is finally taking off, and it seems like this is definitely maybe a speed bump.
Yeah. All right. I also have down on my list Puerto Rico. I think that that's another loser in the way that, I don't mean it in the way that they did anything wrong. I mean it in the way that for whatever reason they continue to have just not a lot of sympathy from President Trump, but just this strange, their story has become politicized in a way that they're recovering from a hurricane. But at the same time, you know, the president tweets out, well, we can't be there forever. You know, he didn't say that. He doesn't say that about Houston. He doesn't say it about Florida. He doesn't say it about even, you know, any of the other situations. He would just, would never expect the commander in chief to say that. Well, we can't be there forever. And especially in the, second week? So it's a very strange story that continues to be more absurd to me as people in Puerto Rico are suffering and somehow there's politics being played.
Well, and I don't know that he would have come out and said it if that mayor hadn't challenged him. There was one mayor that was praising him and the other mayor that was challenging him, the female. And she was everywhere. And she was angry. And so I think that just, you know, typical President Trump
takes
is like,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-mm.
Very strange. And it's not over. I mean, from all accounts, the, you know, the recovery's just been very slow.
I read a piece on Vox, which I think will become a bigger story. It might even be underreported, that the official death toll is something like 30 some odd bodies. I think that the Puerto Rican, I don't know what the government official is there, but something like that. But they had done their own work on going to different morgues and figuring it out. And they said that the body count is well over 400, but the government there is kind of pushing it to the side because that doesn't make for good headline. So it's just, even when you're politicizing who died and how many people died, that's just not a good situation. 312-981-7200, Jeff Cohen, Lauren Cohen in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get to the overreported and underreported stories this week. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. It's a download. I'm Justin Coffin, Lauren Cohen here, Jeff Cohen, Cohen and Cohen. We're right to that point of the show where we have overreported and underreported. What stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered? Let's do overreported. I have on my list today already, one day, it took one day to already find this to be overreported, the Merry Christmas debate that the president brought up today in his speech to the Value Summit, where he said he wants to bring, they don't want to say Merry Christmas, but I'm bringing it back. And then I just watched, I mean, everyone just write about it, because there must be some, there newsrooms around the country are like, that sells papers, get it in the paper. Like, this is not an issue anymore. Like, I feel like we've moved on from it. Why is this even
being
brought up?
It seems very 2000 or something.
Yeah.
And it, first of all, say whatever you want.
What you want. Who cares? I don't know if there's a they in this scenario. I mean, it just seems like candidate Trump once again going to his base. And yet we're treating it as if it's news. And I don't think it's news.
I feel like he throws these things out there. It's like lighting a match to divert from something else. Get away from, let's talking about the Iran deal or North Korea or anything else. And suddenly we end up on the Merry Christmas debate. I mean, this is just who he is. But that whole debate, I mean, it becomes like, what's PC? We go through this period of, you know, is it more appropriate to say happy holidays so you don't offend someone? Or do you, if you know somebody's Jewish, you say happy Hanukkah. If you know somebody celebrates Christmas, you say Merry Christmas. It's just.
But not unlike, okay, we can go right back to the soda tax where I'm like, hey, man, no one should regulate what I want to say and how I want to say it. If I want to say Merry Christmas, I can say Merry Christmas. If I want to say Happy Holidays, I say Happy Holidays. One's not better than the other. One's not different. Who cares? Right. If I say Happy Holidays, it's not because I'm PC. I truly believe. I'm like, I don't know your religion. I don't know what you celebrate. So I say Happy Holidays because I feel in the spirit of holidays. Hey, Happy Holidays.
Whatever it is for you.
Yeah.
I hope it's happy.
Exactly.
May your light shine.
That
dovetails right into yours, Jeff, about this idea. The overreported is the Trump machine. This idea of IQ tests or the mystery police officer or even today. I mean, we saw I'm going to bring religion back, the likes that you've never seen. What does that even mean? I mean, at a certain point, we got to stop reporting every story out and every little thing he says.
Yeah. In the media's defense, this has been a crazy year. We've never seen a president like this. And 95% of the things he says are, you know, newsworthy. And but I agree, there's going to be a point where some of these things we're going to have to kind of let it go. Like we've talked about, I mean, you got Puerto Rico, most of California is on fire. There's a lot going on. We don't have to completely overreact to every little thing that he tweets or says.
I've noticed him, and I'm not the only one, but like today, I mean, at a summit, he said the weirdest thing. It didn't even make sense. It was like, religion, I love religion. Religion, I'm going to bring it back, the likes in which you've never seen. What is that? What are you talking about? And then in the next story, I hear the reporter say, Donald Trump, President Trump did call this the worst deal ever for America. He's talking about the Iran deal. I'm like, wait, he's got hyperbole all over the place. And like to pick and choose and cherry pick what hyperbole is news and what's not. I'm like, all right, you know, he says worst and this is the worst thing. And
he always likes it's a mess.
Yeah. I mean, he's using words that I think he's just placeholding to get to his next thought. And we're trying ways to make it into something bigger.
And he's never moved out of campaign speak.
Right.
He never made that shift at all.
I think in the beginning, the media was sort of like, you know, in the fetal position, blowing into a paper bag. But I think everybody's kind of standing up now and they get it.
They get it. All right, overreported. You have, both of you had this, the kneeling story for the NFL. It's losing a little bit of steam, but you wouldn't know that from the media. They're still trying to get those clicks.
Well, for me, it's what is the story? I mean, it started with Kaepernick kneeling, and he had a reason for kneeling. And then President Trump decided to say, unless I missed something in between when he was in Alabama at the press conference, you know, I think that these guys should be fired if they're kneeling. And it turned into, okay, is this a protest against police brutality in certain communities? Is this, are we protesting the national anthem? Are we wanting to rewrite the national anthem because what's in it? Are we now standing in solidarity against President Trump?
Yeah.
Now we've got school children that are kneeling. Do they know why they're kneeling? And so I look at this story and I go, how did this start and where we are now? And do people even know what this is about anymore?
Well, I wonder. I mean, I would think that the debates that I see are mostly in my sports center, like in the morning, I'll put turn sports center on and that's all they're debating all the time. And I'm like, why is this where the debate's at? Because it's happening in football. I understand that, but I would like to get it out of conversations of the Mike Dickas and the Stephen A. Smiths and move it into a more sophisticated debate.
Yeah, and I agree it's diluted. And the thing for me was that the NFL had this moment that first Sunday where it was at least perceived as a free speech moment. It's like the one thing you can't do is tell people that they can't do something related to the flag or whatever, because that sort of takes away from the point of what makes the flag special. So the NFL has this great moment. Now it turns out that some of the same owners who are actually on the field with these guys, kneeling and locking arms or whatever, are trying to come up with rules that are going to force them to stand. It's like, what? You bet you're ruining it.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the NFL doesn't care at all about the social injustices that the players are kneeling for. They care about their bottom line. And the unity, and we made jokes about this on the show, the unity when you lock arms to show unity against Trump, probably more about keeping every player standing up. You know, then you can't kneel if you're all locked arms, right? One guy's trying to get down, like, get up, you know, like that kind of thing. I mean, they made it seem like we're all together, but you're not really, because
but
you move
Jerry
on.
Jones was kneeling, right? And isn't he one supposedly who's on the list who's going to come up with rules?
Yeah,
I mean, talk about pick a lane. You're kneeling on TV at national TV.
But then it becomes people aren't watching football, and then it becomes about the revenue of football. And now Roger Goodell's going to talk this week, and it never ends.
You know, all of us in here, we care about the bottom line and the ratings of NFL football. Who cares about that stuff? I don't care about that stuff.
And the thing is, if I go to a game, I know for me that I'm going to stand and put my hand over my heart, and I'm going to, you know, stand up for the national anthem. But if you're sitting next to me and you decide not to get up and you're on your cell phone, that's your thing. I'm not going to look
at us. We're all about tonight. We're all about personal responsibility. We don't care about whatever.
The other question that I haven't heard talked about enough is how that sort of, nationalistic demonstration, if you will, got injected into it in the first place. Why do we, that's a whole show.
All right, that's overreported. Lauren Cohen, Jeff Cohen in studio, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do underreported and which story took us down the rabbit hole. Stay with us. It's Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. Lauren Cohn, journalist. Jeff Cohn, investigative reporter over at the Tribune here. And we are all the way to underreported, 312-981-7200. Got some great stuff coming in as well in the text. We'll try to get to everybody. Let's get to underreported. We all had on our list the California wildfires, which, you know, I think early in the week, you definitely can make a case for it. Today and yesterday and today, I've started to see a lot more on this and comparing this natural disaster to the natural disasters we've had in the last 2 months. But this is on par. I mean, the story I heard today was just, I mean, it's devastating. The story I read was that they didn't have much warning that the, in this one town, there were no like iPhone, like, you know, buzzes and tells you, hey man, there's a fire is a block away. They didn't have, for whatever reason, that didn't happen. There was no warning. So there were people getting up in the middle of the night, and within 10 minutes, their houses were engulfed in flames.
Well, that coupled with some of the drone footage that's come out with just entire neighborhoods wiped out. It looks like, you know, a giant tornado went over it or something. It's just amazing.
And 33 deaths we have now.
It's hard for me because, you know, we live in the Midwest, and every year there's wildfires. I mean, there's always this threat of wildfires in California, and we hear so much about it. But this is above and beyond. This is one that you know, you start to wonder about everything that's happened in terms of weather in the last month. This is on par with all that stuff.
It's very scary. I worked in Fresno, California as a reporter, and I went to the fires in Yosemite. We got trapped in. And a lot of people don't know that firemen, first of all, you got to give credit to these firemen who are fighting fires.
Yeah.
They have to actually set fires to stop fires. That's part of what they do. They don't just drop retardant from the sky and those planes that you see. They have to set fire lines. And it's just nothing but burning out of control. And you don't know which way. If the wind blows, that fire goes that way. And it's almost like a strategy that they try and contain these fires, but you can if the weather changes. And then it just burns through entire neighborhoods are gone. And where do the people go? It's devastating.
Well, what's really scary about it, still hundreds missing. Mm-hmm. You know,
when you look at those pictures, you can't imagine that they've searched all those lots. Just amazing.
Some more underreported stories. We also have in the underreported variety. Let's see here. You'd love the story. The Chicago Marathon, won by the first American, Galen Rupp.
I love this guy. I mean, he was from Oregon. He was, you know, an all-star athlete growing up, and then he goes to the Olympics. Who knew? And then he pulls out this huge win. But what I found incredibly fascinating, because he trained with Alberto Salazar, is that, you know, he'll run, you know, hundreds of hours during the week, but he does another, you know, 30 plus hours in the water. So he runs in, think of a bathtub, you know, or a small pool. It's his own private pool with a treadmill on it.
Yeah.
And he runs in the water because it breaks up lactic acid. It's not as much stress fracture or problems on the body. It was fascinating to me to read that whole story. And, of course, then I go to, well, why do we not have a gym in the middle of Chicago that I can invest in?
The new craze.
And be the new workout thing, right? You know, spin took off and
Orange
we have all these gyms.
Out? Underwater running's in.
Exactly.
They mentioned on the coverage, too, that he sealed a room in his house to simulate being at altitude.
Right.
That's a good idea.
I just thought his whole story was so fascinating.
Oh, interesting about what goes into running a marathon for real. There's a lot that goes. We always hear the story of the amateurs who run and what it takes to train. But when you're trying to win it, what you have to go through.
Yeah, and then this sort of kid comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the typical person that we would think that would win a marathon.
Lauren, you also had Moldgate, the Cubs Moldgate. This was a story that was
during the break.
Yeah, this is really a 3-hour story. I mean, it came and went like that, but it really was about just a quick update on it. Steven Strasburg wasn't going to pitch Game 4 because he was sick, and the Nationals were sick because there was Dusty Baker said there was mold coming through the hotel that they were staying. They were going to switch hotels. Lauren, you believe him.
I totally believe him because I have major allergies when there's ragweed and different things. And I'm always looking at the pollen count. And I was trying to figure out during those days why I was having so much trouble. And it was the mold count. You know, I was in my car rolling down the window. I was so sick myself. And then I know what it's like when you have mold inside. Can make you really sick. So I believed it.
You don't believe it?
It just became a joke so fast. I think people were offended. It's like, we got all this stuff going on in Chicago. Now we're moldy too. It's like, come on, just pitch.
Just pitch.
pitch even if you have mold in your system. Get over it.
We're going to show up at the ballpark. You can come too if you want.
Don't be the Derrick Rose of the Bulls.
Yeah, we live here. We're going to put nine guys in the field that breathe this constantly. You can get out there.
There's a new study out. There's a new study out that says this was a that Chicago. This was a reputable study that said Chicago is one of the safest cities in the world. It is number 19 on the list, the second highest of American cities. I think San Francisco was 15th. But the idea that Chicago would make any list in terms of safety and crime is underreported.
Wasn't there weird criteria, though? Wasn't there, like, digital safety in here? And it wasn't just,
well, that's what they said.
Know,
they said the big
safety
thing that skewed them to the top was that they had great cybersecurity here in this town. So maybe that...
That makes me feel better about all the hacking when my credit card was stolen the other night.
All right. This one, I love this one. No more liquor license in River North, the area right here, just on Hubbard Street, just a block from our studio. If you've been down there recently at night, you will see that every single storefront in that area has turned into a hot, hip, new bar for Chicago. And Brandon Riley, the alderman in the 42nd Ward, has said enough. And this week, City Council said no more new liquor license to River North. What do you think of that?
I was really surprised when I saw that. I didn't even know it went on. And on the one hand, okay, I get it. Drive more business to maybe River West. On the other hand, really? you have the power to do that? But then I stopped myself and I thought, Chicago way. The aldermen get whatever they want here.
Well, it does get crazy down there, for one. And I can see some controls. Maybe somebody thinks that that's needed. But if you read into it, I think that there are allowances for hotels and
for restaurants.
Yes, yeah, so you have a certain percentage of your sales come from food, so that and get, people are.
But this really has more to do with the bars that are strict bars in Chicago, and this is that popped up with the I can't remember the place that's the Bottle Blonde. Yeah. And it also was another issue over a little further beyond the Ohio feeder ramp. This idea of the bars, straight up bars with no food or food being secondary, caused much more trouble to the area. And the area has gentrified, that there are a lot of condos, there are a lot of things going on there, and they just don't want that kind of this type. So that's what they're doing. They're changing the zoning code to eliminate bars that come in just for the party folk.
Well, that could be it. And I think maybe people are afraid of, you know, once Hubbard is really built out, which it basically is, where does the spillover go?
And we don't have the time, but there's a race component as well, because the bars, the Bottle Blonde, the list of who can come into the bar was eye-opening, the no baggy pants type stuff that we've been hearing about for decades now. And then also the other bar, there was discrimination that was played. So race plays a part as well, but we'll get into that at some other point. 312-981-7200. Let's take our last break. We'll come back. We will do what stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now. Stay with us. All right, we're wrapping it up. 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. Lauren Cohen and Jeff Cohen.
You're doing this yourself.
That's right. all right, so let's get to what story took us down the rabbit hole. We don't have a lot of time, and what stories will be remembered. Got an interesting one from The Atlantic. Will Donald Trump destroy the presidency? You went deep. You read a long piece.
It's right. It's a new record for me. It's a clickbait headline for sure, but I think the point of the piece was, will he change the presidency? All the stuff we've talked about, sort of the coarse behavior, the over-politicization of everything, kind of the scorched earth, will that become kind of the wave of the future for the next president and presidents after? I think the outcome for now is no, just because the writer just decided that there hasn't been enough political advantage for him as of yet. It's actually, he's had enough blowback.
Let's be frank. I mean, this is the second president in a row that has done this. I mean, President Obama, who tried to work with Congress, couldn't get it done, did the same type of policies that Trump is doing. He's hyper-loading him. Like, what Trump is doing is, but he's taking a playbook. And the thing I'm scared about is the fact is this just what we're going to do now? Every 4 years, going to undo
that's,
and change? I mean, is this
that's
what we're going to do
I
now?
Called it a rabbit hole, because for me, it just made me think, you're right, is that what happens on day two? The prior person's executive orders are all thrown in the garbage. You know, every deal that we've made with a foreign country is in the garbage. Every treaty we've signed is in the garbage. Do other countries figure when they're, you know, make an agreement with the U.S., it's for 4 years?
And it scares me only because I have to ask. I try to be objective. Every single thing that President Obama put into place for this country, not every one of them is worth repealing or rescinding. It can't be. I'm not dumb to think that that's the case. I mean, this is politics at play. This is not, I mean, everything isn't, I mean, because they'll sell, the sell is, oh, that's terrible for this country. Is it? I mean, every single thing that we did, I mean, 4 years, is it? Was it that, I mean, are we really running on the idea of complete and utter incompetence? I don't think so, but that's where I'm at.
Well, my response is I hope not, because it's exhausting.
Yeah,
I'm completely exhausted. And the other thing is if there is a silver lining in all the craziness, is that maybe with the whole turn of the tide against politicians to elect the non-politician, because we're sick of the politicians, and seeing this, it's going to get more people involved, more people or different types of people to run or be engaged,
yeah, right.
And it'll elevate us to a different level.
I had, as my rabbit hole, and it's very interesting, it's similar to what happened here in River North, but Alderman Proco Joe Moreno and the fight with the guy who owns the Doubledore building. And it's very strange because zoning happened this week that essentially changed the zoning of the Doubledore property that actually devalues it. And there was the video that came out a couple months ago that showed them fighting on the street, the alderman and the property owner, and questions about whether or not the alderman superseded his power or used his authority in an abusive authority by saying, I'm going to make sure this doesn't work. And now it's actually gotten through city council. Essentially, this guy wants to turn Doubledore, the old Doubledore, into the next Banana Republic or whoever it will take. But the alderman is protecting that, saying, no, I don't want you to ruin the neighborhood the way it is. And although if you've been to Wicker Park, that argument's long gone. I mean, so I just was interested in this argument between a guy who believes that he's got his community's best interest in mind and a property owner. I just think that's interesting about
when he came off like a bully.
Yeah.
In the argument in the video. I mean, don't forget that there's cell phones everywhere if you're going to be out there.
He knew it was being taped.
Yeah.
You could tell. They all did.
But
and
it's
even
the arrogance
yeah.
of the politicians and, you know.
He believes strongly in his argument. I mean, there's something to be said about it. I mean, the way that went down with the Doubledore was a little bit head scratcher. I mean, ruined a club that means a ton for that neighborhood because the building owner wants to make out, which is, I mean, that's his right, I guess, right?
He's a businessman.
It just shines a spotlight on our system. That's what we have here. The alderman is, when it comes to development, they're the boss.
Yeah. Oh, really? There you go. You just summed it up in one sentence. All right, we're done. All right, which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week? Lauren.
Go Cubs, go.
Yeah, you think this is the start?
I think it's the Cubs.
Okay. I hope so. Pete hopes so. Everybody hopes so. I like that. Jeff, what do you got?
It could be the Cubs. For once, I have a 500-year one. Last time I was on, I said Trubisky, which I think is already wrong.
Right?
But I think this one, there's a super volcano under Yellowstone Park that if it blows, could be a planet killer, they say. So that was the scroll for me, and I got to that one. I was going to say that was underreported, but I'll say that's my 500-year.
500 years would be like, remember when we all died from that volcano?
Right, when we're you know, looking for leftover berries, we can talk about that.
And I say that the story that will be remembered is soda tax. I think this is a huge loss.
One.
I think that the fight against obesity and the epidemic took a huge loss because no other city is going to take this on anymore because it will be political suicide. So this will be remembered when we're all 600 pounds and it's an idiocracy and we're trying to use Gatorade to make our plants work. Lauren Cohen and Jeff Cohen in studio. Lauren, journalist. Jeff, investigative reporter, Chicago Tribune. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank
great
you, sir.
Thank you for having us.
Welcome back to Download on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My next guest is host of one of our favorite shows here on the Download, Check Please. The WTTW Restaurant Review Program is gearing up for their 17th season. It started tonight. You can pick it up different times all weekend long. And host Catherine DiOrio will be at the helm once again. DiOrio is doubling down on her career in the hospitality industry. Her day job is being executive director for the Kendall College Trust. Kendall, of course, one of the great Chicago culinary schools. The Trust is all about giving scholarships to students in need. Through scholarships and her culinary summer camp, DiOrio's dedicated to getting more kids involved in the culinary arts. Coming up on November 4th, she's hosting the Fried Chicken and Champagne Fest. This is a fundraiser for the Trust that features some great Chicago talent frying up some fowl. Catherine DiOrio is my guest. Welcome back to The Download, Catherine, and congratulations. Hi. Another season starting up here tonight.
I know, another season under my belt. Season 5 for me, if you can believe it.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know.
Wow.
Everyone's like, it's like your first year, right? I'm like, not quite.
That's amazing. I didn't know this about you, that you work for the Kendall College Trust. Mm-hmm. Why is that important to you? Talk about the Kendall College Trust, where it came from.
So the Kendall College Trust, I went to culinary school at Kendall College, actually.
Really?
Yes. So that was part of the transition out of the law and into the culinary world. And I started with the trust. I was actually being recruited to be a board member. And then I kind of saw what they did. And during the interim of the interviews and all these things, they lost their executive director. And it just seemed like a really nice meld of kind of my legal mm-hmm. background, different boards I had already sat on, like as a philanthropist, you know, just in my own philanthropic pursuits.
Right.
And then obviously my love for the culinary industry.
So when you made the transition from law to food, you did go to Kendall College?
Yeah,
that was,
that's where I went to school. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great, I mean, obviously I love it. I mean, it afforded me a completely different career, and I am where I am now because that's where I started off.
How does it help you that you went through the training to host a show like Check Please, and even work at the Kendall Trust? But how does it help you to have had that experience at Kendall?
Well, you know, the thing is, when you're talking to guests about a restaurant, there's, you know, you kind of have two perspectives. So your guests have a perspective just kind of coming in and like, hey, do I like the food? Was the server nice to me? Was I greeted right? You know?
Right.
And then there's, when they start talking about food, it's nice to be able to actually come from a place, an informed place, to kind of guide the conversation, to make sure that it's a fair conversation, you know, because somebody could think, oh, well, that's weird. Why would they do that?
Right.
When actually maybe that's the correct way to cook something,
right,
or
right, right,
that is the proper way to serve something. And so I think it's just more from, obviously it helps from a credibility standpoint, but I think it helps to make sure that the conversation stays fair, because people can have a bad, you know, experience, or an experience and they think it's bad, but they don't realize actually they just had like the best Italian meal maybe of their life.
You know?
It's just kind of more of, you know, and being able to pepper that into the conversation, and also to give some more takeaway to the viewers, you know, just to kind of explain why something, someone will say, oh, this tasted like this, or the texture was like this, and I can just kind of throw in why from a technique standpoint and just a more informed standpoint.
Before you became host, was the idea that you would get into restaurants, that you wanted to be in the kitchen? Was the concept coming out of Kendall College that you were going to dive right into to more culinary arts than just hosting a show?
Yeah, I mean, actually hosting media, which I ended up in, was not really part of the plan. I mean, at the time when I was in school, honestly, if you had an interest in being on Food Network, people were like, you're not serious, I'll knife you, get out of here, you know? Like, it was kind of a very, like,
sharp
it was
knife.
Not cool to want to be on TV. Now, every student, I think, at Kendall, you know, you just, like, they all have the dreams of being the next Top Chef, the next Iron Chef, et cetera,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
So for me, I actually went into it because I wanted to be in catering. As a lawyer, I used to always throw these really elaborate dinner parties and have all of my friends over. And some of them were like up to 100 people. And I would do everything from scratch. I'd be like, we're going to do a tiki party. So I'm going to learn how to do Polynesian cuisine, you know? And then I would do everything from scratch. So people would always say, like, oh, who catered this? And I said, oh, no, I did it all. You know, and it was a total outlet for me because clearly I was not enjoying my life as a lawyer. So funneling all of this energy into something else. And so at a certain point, you know, people would kind of tease me and just say, you should quit the law
and
you should be a caterer and we'll all hire you. And after a particularly bad day at work, I was like, ding, 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 I think I might do this. So I called all the different culinary schools, like all the schools in the city, had them send me their information, researched them. I actually stayed working as a lawyer while I went to school at night and on weekends to help pay for it because, you know, it's costly.
Yeah, right.
And then kind of the rest is history.
It's amazing, too, to think about that if this was a side project to do all this and you did it with such care and you were creating things from scratch. Does it lose anything when it becomes your main project? When the idea that now you're immersed, you are now entrenched in the culinary arts. Do you find yourself, I wish I could, you know, at night, I think I'll try a case.
Well, you know, luckily my husband's a lawyer. So if I ever feel like just
you're
chatting,
you
know, I'll be like, hey, throw one of those depths over here. I'll take a look at it. You know, I have to say I don't miss the law at all. So I oddly use it more than I thought I would in my job as the executive director at the Kendall College Trust. You know, I'm creating donor agreements. I'm reviewing contracts. You know, we're the stewards of various donors' money. So there's a lot that kind of goes into that when you're dealing with planned giving. So it's interesting. I'm kind of becoming a generalist lawyer as far as like non-for-profits are concerned. And
well, it's got to help. It has to help when you're dealing with donors and any sort of charitable giving, any sense, having a legal background has to help. Right?
Absolutely. Well, and it's just sometimes it's just talking, being able to talk to whoever I do hire who's a specialist. So whatever counsel I do hire, it's just kind of I can keep it quick to the point. I know what I need to know. I kind of flag some of the stuff already. I don't need to add any billable hours to it. You know, I'm probably like the worst client. They're like, she's awful.
I speak lawyer. I know what's going on. I speak lawyer. And you're like, oh, geez, thanks.
It's like once they start asking me at restaurants, I'm like, gotta go.
Catherine Dioria is my guest tonight. She, of course, the host of Check Please on WTTW, which premiered tonight, but it obviously premiered at 8 o'clock. It also be on throughout the weekend. She's also the executive director at the Kendall College Trust. She's got a big event coming up on November 4th called Fried Chicken and Champagne Fest. Great Chicago chefs. We'll talk about, let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that and more about what you do at the Trust. Catherine Dioria, my guest tonight on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, Catherine Dioria. She's the host of Check Please, which, of course, premiered tonight. Unbelievable. 17th season.
I know. It's amazing, right?
It's amazing. A great show. We love it. Pete and I love the show. Something that we watch every single week. I had to fiddle with my DVR because it just keeps recording all the reruns. Like, oh, I have, God, like 640 Check Pleases on my
diary. You're like sick of my face.
So like, every time, but it doesn't, because it doesn't list. And I know this is an issue, but it doesn't list what restaurants, some of them don't. They just say, they just give the generic. So you watch the first minute and a half of the intro, and then they do the fade in, and it's people that you recognize. You're like, seen this one, pause. So very excited to have the new season back. Catherine, also the executive director at the Kendall College Trust. She's got an event coming up on November 4th called Fried Chicken and Champagne Fest, fundraiser for the Trust that features great Chicago talent, fried chicken, of course. There's always been a disparity in who gets involved in the culinary arts, who gets into the world of restaurants, and it's usually an affluent, and it's tough to go to these kind of schools. Obviously, money is a barrier, but it also seems that it seems to almost cater to a more white background.
I think that there's definitely a money issue. It's very costly to go to culinary school, but necessarily so because those facilities are just very expensive to keep up. And I think, so people are like, why does it cost so much? And it's like, well, you know, turning on the hood costs $20,000 for, like, you know. So so it's just those little things you don't really think about when you're thinking of
it. It has to be an operational school. It's not just classrooms and turn on the heat. There's a lot of things you got to do. Right?
And at Kendall, the one of the things that's really great about their kitchens is, you know, they're really careful to limit the amount of students in each classroom so that they can obviously see everything. They all have their own station. You have your own workstation, and you're not sharing it with, you know, necessarily four or five other students. And that makes a big difference because the hands-on part, that's where you learn. You know, you can't learn to cook. You can learn about food. You can get a general idea, but you really can't learn it. It's a hands-on profession, you know. So the culinary camp is amazing. So we started that. This was our second year. We added another session this year, and we work with CPS and CCAP, which is Careers Through the Culinary Arts Program, which is a culinary program within the CPS system. So it's a national non-for-profit, and then, you know, they put it into, obviously, the CPS system here. So we find our students through that have an interest in culinary and let them come to Kendall for the week. And they go through an abridged version of what your first block would be at culinary school. And then from there, they stay in the dorms. So they get to meet not just the students that are from the CPS camp, but students that are from all over Chicago. So it's really fun. They get to meet, you know, it's like this person from the South Side is with this person from the suburbs, which is this person from, you know, the Gold Coast, and this person from Evanston. It's just very great to watch them. And they all come in, and they're all like, nobody's talking the first day. And then, like, day three, we're like, oh, my God, we can't control these kids. You know? Like, they just have, like, all these new friends. And then we take them on cultural excursions at night because a lot of the kids that are coming to my camp, a lot of them, even though they live in Chicago, they're not seeing downtown Chicago. They've never seen the lakefront. You know, they've never seen Millennium Park. So we take them on a bus tour that shows them all of the major sites in Chicago. And then we do fun things because I don't want it to be just, it's about part of it. It's the camaraderie and being with people. So they'll do like iFly and do like indoor skydiving and kind of just do all these things.
My camp would be clean up the kitchen when you're done. That would be my camp.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of the, when I read the, you know, the surveys after from the kids, that's the thing there. So what's the worst part about camp? Cleaning the dishes. Right. Like, nobody
I
wanted
would
to
do
that.
I just do a day of cleaning dishes. We're like, you're going to learn how to clean these. No one said this is going to be fun. We've heard over and over and over, and chefs have come into the studio and talked about a cook shortage, the idea that it becomes harder because the restaurants, the world is expanding. So many more restaurants need cooks. And there is this idea that a younger student who's going through the culinary school, they want to get to the top. They want to be chefs. They don't necessarily want to be cooks. How do you pair those two needs together? When you have an industry that is having a shortage in one area and you have a culinary school that could feed that, how do you put those things together?
It's hard because the reality is that every chef was a cook at some point. And it's kind of teaching students and kind of trying to drill that into their head that you have to learn to walk before you can run.
You want that experience.
You need the experience.
The whole line. Right.
It's the only way you'll get better. You're not going to be, you know, and it's funny because you see it a lot, and you see it not just in the culinary industry, but also in, you know, the beverage industry. Someone comes out, I'm like, just learn to make a good Manhattan. That's way harder than these crazy drinks with like 40 ingredients in it, you know? Like, because guess what? You're not hiding behind anything. Yeah, it's like, make me a good roast chicken and then we'll talk, you know? So like, it's an interesting concept, you know, because, you know, at the same time, you know, working with students and with the kind of like young minds, I want them to be encouraged. You know, I don't want to ever be like, no, you're going to be a cook. You're going to be a cook. You got to do this. You got to do this. You know, I want them to be like, this is what's necessary because I think you have the potential to be a great chef. So this is part of what you have to go through. And I always tell them, I said, do you know how many jobs I was working as a lawyer, ran my own department. I said, and I worked for free for years to get experience.
I mean, there's so many different jobs and industries. And you think about the legal industry as well, that there is a established pecking order. If you think about the medical field, there is established pecking orders. There just seems to be this want and desire to jump ahead in the culinary arts, and an area that needs to be filled in these restaurants is not being filled. Catherine DiOrio in studio, Fried Chicken and Champagne Fest. We'll wrap there before we talk Czech, please. talk about this because we've had, you know, so many different festivals of different kind of food, but fried chicken, now you're talking.
Yeah, people love fried chicken, you know, so it's funny. I was trying to figure out what we could do that would be fun and different than what was out there, and I didn't want to just do a repeat. You know, there's like a gajillion, like Burger Bash, Hamburger Hop, like all these things. Right. And so I was like, what do people love? What do I know people will come out for? And it's like fried chicken. And then I was like, okay, what do I love? And I'm like, champagne. So I was like, this is perfect, you know? And it just happens to be a classic pairing. I mean, you know, kind of that Christmas and the bubbles, they cut right through that fat. So it just
I would never think champagne and fried chicken would go together. But.
Yeah, it's delicious. You should come.
November 4th, Fried Chicken and Champagne Fest. It'll be at Kendall, right?
Yes.
Right there. Czech, please. It started tonight. What can we expect from this season, the 17th season, your fifth at the helm?
Yes.
Last year you came on, you talked about that a lot of the guests were complaining about service. Like that was kind of a
that was
has
a
that
huge
been rectified?
Thing.
I mean, what are some of the threads of the trends that you're noticing from taping this year? Everyone loves the food?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So there's a few things. Service, we didn't actually get the same amount of attention this year. So that's
maybe they're
good.
Fixing it.
Yeah,
I watched
like,
last season, and all the restaurateurs are like,
people are hearing, you know. But I think it's interesting. I think that people are interested, kind of in we're getting that return to really the interest in smaller groups, not necessarily splashy. So it's interesting to see that as I feel Chicago is becoming more of a restaurant group city.
Going against it, right?
So, so it's kind of interesting watching that. But, you know, I think there's room for both. And I think that the restaurant groups that are in the city are doing a great job. And so, you know.
I guess I'm just curious about this. Is there a lobbying effort from restaurants? Are they like, has it become part of a marketing plan? We're like, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to get on Czech, please. Do they try to use their sway to be able to get people to review them?
Oh, for sure. you know, and people definitely come up to me. And thankfully, David Manilow, the creator and executive producer, keeps me sheltered from that. So right, I always say, I'm like, I have no say in it. You know, you got to talk to the big guy.
Here, try this appetizer. You're going to love it. All right. I don't have a say in it. Right.
You know, but I do always say, because sometimes their publicists will come up to me and they'll say, we want to be on Check Please. We want to be on Check Please. And I can always tell who's kind of new at the lobby to get on Check Please and who isn't, because the ones that are a little like they've been in the business, they kind of know how Check Please works, they kind of know what they can do. But then the new person will always be like, we want to be on Check Please.
Make it happen. Here's my calendar. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I was like, well, I'd love you to be there as well. So, you know, I always just let them know, like, this is how it works.
My final question on it is just, you know, sometimes you'll have a smaller restaurant, a family-run restaurant that gets on Check Please, and there seems to be, at least in the produced pieces, a surprise to it, where they're like, cameras in my face. And let's say that it doesn't necessarily go well, that two other people didn't like it or whatever. There is a little bit of risk in these restaurants being picked where, you know, people will say, I'm just going to avoid that one because two out of the three people didn't like the Hush Puppies.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, though. You'd be surprised. Almost every restaurant does well regardless of what the review was. And I think it's part of it. It's because of the producers are brilliant at the pairings of who they put there, because somebody will always say, well, like, they just kind of focus in on one person. They're like, oh, that person's like me, and I'm going to trust their opinion on these restaurants. Right. Or I like the restaurant they recommended, therefore their opinion's probably going to jive more with mine on these other places. Right. And, you know, the family-owned ones, it's always funny because sometimes they don't really know what Check Please is. They've kind of heard of it, or they won't really know. And then one of their – they'll tell people like, oh, I was asked to be on this show, Check Please. And then, you know, one of the person that comes to the restaurant, oh, my gosh, you have to be on it. That's great. And then they start getting really excited. And then they're like, oh, this is what it's all about. And they get so excited. And it's just – I mean, the family-owned restaurants, like, they kill me. Like, I love it, you know, because – you know that they don't have PR budgets. They don't have the marketing budget. And this is, you know, this is what they do for their living. This is not, they are not a big restaurant group. And so it's just really awesome.
Well, season 17 started tonight. It'll be reruns throughout the weekend. And, of course, continuing on Fridays, 8 o'clock. Catherine DiOrio is the host. This is her fifth season. She's also the executive director for the Kendall College Trust, which is holding a fundraiser on November 4th called Fried Chicken and Champagne Fest, which will be at Kendall, which features up great Chicago talent paired with great champagne. Catherine DiOrio, great to see you. Thanks
great
for being here,
too.
And congrats on all the success. And Check Please is back.